Welcome to Financial Peace University, Lesson 3, Cash Flow Planning.
Please welcome Dave Ramsey.
Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thank you guys so much. Well, this is one of the most important, if not the most important lesson in all of Financial Peace University, the cash flow planning lesson. My friend Zig Ziglar says, if you aim at nothing, you will hit it every single time. This is the place where we start happening to our money, where we start aiming our dollars at our goals, where we're aiming our dollars and we're squeezing our dollars so we've got dollars to throw at those baby steps and start working our way up through the baby steps. John Maxwell, my buddy, says that a budget is people telling their money what to do instead of wondering where it went. Haven't we all had that feeling at tax time? We get down there, we do our taxes, and we go $65,000 income or $85,000 income or whatever it is, and you add it up and you go, where did that go? A budget is people telling their money what to do instead of wondering where it went. Now, one of the things I've learned is, and we talked about this in the very first lesson in Super Savings, where we said that personal finance is 80% behavior. It's 20% head knowledge. And I think that's why God is so concerned with how we handle our money, because it's an indication of where our heart is. It's an indication of where we are in our personal walk, our character, our discipline, if you will. And so it's very, very important understanding that this is so behavior-based that we feel money. In our culture, we tend to compartmentalize things. And we tend to say, well, you know, mathematics is over here, it's left brain. That's just all about the math, and there's nothing to do with relationships or spirituality or emotion over that. But personal finance is about behavior, so it has to be about spirituality. It's about behavior, so it has to be about relationships. It's about behavior, so it has to be about emotions. And so learning to feel money again, and sense when money leaves, you have an ouchie moment. You know, it's like, ah, you need to feel money again to be able to control it and win. And if you put yourself in a position that you're feeling money, it'll help you modify your behavior to hit your goals. I don't want you to feel money to feel pain unless you should feel pain. I mean, I don't want you to be one of those people that can touch a hot stove and not feel it. That's not a good idea. And see, with all the conveniences we have now, with debit cards and the internet interaction and even our cell phones, you know, we can buy stuff on them and all these different methodologies we've got to buy things, and we never actually touch cash when we're buying it. We're not feeling our money. So while you're going through the early stages of Financial Peace University, these first several weeks while you're in the class, I want you to go back to kind of an old-fashioned way of handling money on some things. Now, some things we're going to stay sophisticated. We're going to use the internet. I do. I still use my debit card at the pump. I'm too lazy to walk inside, right? But I, you know, what would happen if you had to pay cash when the gas prices went up? You would feel the gas prices more. And there would be more of an emotional reaction to gas prices changing than there is. Now it's just like a number and it comes out and they hand you a little piece of paper. And you don't feel that. See, there's a whole different thing going on here. See, it's my contention that, for instance, they do it with taxes too, don't they? They take it out of your check and you never realize you paid money. You just got a smaller check. I think if they put a tax collector at your office, in every case, and when you got paid, you had to walk up and you had to pay the poor tax collector in cash every time you got paid, that person's life would be in danger. Don't you think? I mean, if you got a $5,000 check and you had to walk up and you had to hand them money, and then you're thinking about them buying $27,000 toilet seats in Washington, you'd be going bananas. Tax collectors would be treated like they were in the Bible. They would be a pariah. And it wouldn't even be their fault. We might even elect a different Congress if we had to do that. See, we don't feel money the same way when we don't see real money. when it's just numbers that are transferred or it's a piece of plastic. And I want to encourage you to put yourself in a position during this 9 weeks, during the 10 or 15 weeks that you embrace this whole thing. But with, you know, go into the details, dig in, and do some things you've never done before so you get some things you've never gotten before. And that includes converting some portions of your life to real cash so that you feel the money. That's a big deal. Don't miss that. That's going to be worth the price of admission alone right there. Now, let's look at some budgeting basics as we get started. The first thing I want you to know about money is active. It moves all over the place. It's wild. It's out of control. It's why we call it currency. It's got a current, like a river has a current. It's moving. It's all over the place. And if money is active and it's running everywhere, our job is to make it behave. And sometimes it feels like we're trying to herd cats. You know, we're trying to nail Jell-O to a tree, right? I coached my son's ice hockey team when he was growing up. Put 25 7-year-olds on ice skates. Oh, you're done. Money's kind of the same way, isn't it? You know, it's like they're everywhere. And the people that win with money are the ones that understand that and understand it has to be tamed. And the budget, the cash flow plan that we're working on tonight is the whip and the chair. It makes it behave. You have to happen to your money. You have to tell your money what to do, or you'll always wonder where it went. Dr. Stephen Covey says in his book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People, the number one habit of highly effective people is they're proactive. They happen to things. Everything doesn't happen to them. They don't use victim language. They are an impact. They make a dent in things instead of things making a dent in them. And you got to take on that issue. Rick Warren says that you need to be intentional in purpose-driven life. You got to be intentional. So be intentional with your money. Be proactive with your money. Otherwise, it's going to leave. People who don't watch it, it just leaves. It wanders off. And you won't have any. I'm often asked when I'm being interviewed by the press, they're saying, Dave, what's the number one cause, number one mistake that the American public makes with money? I said, well, there's a lot of mistakes we make with money, and they all fall under one heading. We didn't pay attention. You've got to be intentional. When you pay attention, then a lot of the mistakes that you make don't happen because they're mistakes of laziness. Their mistakes of, we're just kind of wander along and everything's going to be okay. It's not okay. You have to nail this Jell-O to a tree. You have to get that 7-year-old hockey team to line up in formation. You've got to get the whip and the chair out and make these dollars behave. You will either learn to manage money or the lack of it will always manage you. Money flows from those who do not manage it to those who do. That's one of the reasons there will always be some level of wealth inequality. The Bible tells us that. Jesus said it all the time. He said the poor will always be with us. And the poor will always be with us for multiple reasons. And it's sad, and I don't want anybody to be poor. I want to teach anybody to not think that way, to have a different mentality, to not set them up. But behaviors and choices, as we said the first night, cause our results. And so we got to change our behaviors and change our choices to get the results. And this is a big one. The choice to happen to our money. You have to do a written cash flow plan. Now that, you could just circle that and say that's almost the thesis statement, not only of this lesson, but maybe of the whole course. And you could circle it, and you could circle every month. You have to do a unique plan for each and every month. I mean, you can just circle the whole statement. Did I say that once, right? This is a big deal. If you manage money for a company called You Incorporated, and you manage money for You Incorporated, the way you manage money for you now, would you fire you? Don't answer that. And yet, we're mismanaging, we're not faithful in the little things, and we want God to bless us with the bigger things. And he says, when you're faithful in the little, you will be given more to manage. If you work at a fast food place and you do a bad job, they don't promote you to regional manager. You know, when your 16-year-old gets a car and they're incompetent and they don't know how to drive, unless you're silly, you don't give them a brand new car. I give them a 94 Chevette with a tired gerbil under the hood. And then when you prove competency, I will move you up into nicer things and more powerful things. Why? Because I'm a loving father. And I'm going to give my children things that they can control given their level of competency. Did you know if you get given a big gift that you can't control, it'll actually hurt you rather than help you? Your heavenly Father knows that. So don't be praying, Lord, send me more money. Lord, send me more money. Lord, send me more money. I'm a doofus. I won't do anything right with money, but send me more. He's going, uh-uh. Because I love you, I'm not going to curse you with something you don't have the character to carry. So be faithful in the little things, and then be expecting more to manage on His behalf. The problem with this stuff is it's hard. And when you first start doing this, you're just not going to be any good at it because you've never done it before. When you sit down to do this cash flow plan, you're going to be awful. The first month, you're going to have 17 emergency budget committee meetings. The next month, you'll have about 10, and the next month, you'll have about 4. You'll get better as you go along, but it takes about 90 days to get a level of competency, about 3 whole months of doing this, to kind of work the wrinkles out, to iron out the problems. It takes 90 days to be any good at it. Say 90 days.
90 days.
Now, practice makes perfect. Grandma always said that. But think about times that you have had to learn to do something brand new and how you weren't any good at it at first. I remember I got my driver's license about 20 minutes after I turned 16 years old. I was one of those kids, I was dying to drive. I mean, we get home and everybody's sitting around and we had supper and a buddy of mine called and says, you got your driver's license? Meet us down at the Pizza Hut, right? 16 years old, we're going to the Pizza Hut. So I get in my dad's pickup. I'm free, baby. I have freedom. I can drive. I have my license. I am a fully grown person. Wow. I go to Pizza Hut. We go in. I talk to my buddies. We drink Coca-Colas. We eat pizza. I leave in my dad's truck, and I backed into a man's brand new Corvette. Ow! Not funny. Oh, I wasn't any good at driving when I first started. Were you? My kids weren't any good at driving. I get them in there with a straight shift. I get a whiplash. Every stoplight was an experience. You're not any good when you first start something. You remember when you first started riding a bike? Crash. Crack the head, crack the knee, something. Get those little things on your hands. You know what I'm talking about? But later on, you kept riding and you kept getting better and better. You kept driving and you kept getting better and better. I remember the first time we went snow skiing. They put us on the bunny slope. I thought, a bunny, that's kind of innocuous. It's not a big deal. This was a big rabbit. I get up there. And you know, the bunny slope's all about learning to ride the chairlift, really, and survive that, right? I mean, we're riding the chairlift, and we got on with all of our equipment, which nobody else had done. We thought we were way ahead. I mean, there's equipment dotted all the way up through there, right? And we're looking up there at the top, and people are coming off just piling up. So I told Sharon, I said, you go around to the right. I'm going to go around the left. We're going to miss this pile. We got a plan. Tips up. Here we go. We were brand new, you know? So I went around to the left and stopped. She went around to the right, never stopped. All the way to the restaurant. Now she skis anything she wants to ski all those years later, and so do I. But when we first started, it's kind of scary, and you're kind of like Bambi on ice. You're not real good at it, you know? So remember learning to ride a bike. Remember learning to drive. Remember the snow ski experience or whatever it was you had to learn, and you weren't any good at it, but you kept at it until you got good at it. You can establish a level of competency, but it's not instantaneous. It's a process to get better by continuing to do something that at first is outside your comfort zone. And that's what this is all about. So the Bible clearly says, Jesus said, which of you intending to build a tower does not sit down first and count the cost? Lest you get halfway up and you're unable to finish, and those who see you begin to mock you and say, this man began to build and was unable to finish. Don't be one of those Christians that can't pay their bills. It's a bad witness. Be one of those people that lives your life in such a way that your life is attractive to others. And that includes this whole area of money, especially around this issue of budgeting. Think about it. The average household income in America today is about $50,000. Now, if you take 10 years of a $50,000 a year income, that would be $500,000 that flows through your fingers in 10 years. You would never build a $500,000 home with a builder and you just meet with him and just go, "I'll just put me one over there." No, you would sit down with an architect and develop what Jesus said. He said, don't build a tower without first counting the cost. You would put together a blueprint. And you would have every detail of where what was going to be brick, what was going to be rock. You'd have the electrical schematic and the HVAC schematic in there. Everything would be laid out on paper before you broke ground on the house. The same thing is true here. On paper, before the month begins, every month for the rest of your life. And you have to balance your bank account. You have to balance your bank account. So many people today, because of the conveniences on the internet, the way they think they balance their bank account is they just check their balance. About 8 times a day, they check their balance. I don't want to be that freaked out. I don't want to be living that close to the edge. What are you checking your balance thinking something unexpected is going to happen? Just money's going to, wow, look at that, money came in there. You know, there's nothing going to happen. It's all those things you've been buying keep showing up and you're going, oh no, oh no. Oh no, oh no. Just keep checking your, that's not balancing your bank account. That's not keeping your checking account balanced. There's an old thing we used to learn in general business back in the day where we learned to reconcile a bank account. And that means you take what you think you've spent and what you think you've deposited and you compare that with what the bank says you've spent and what the bank says you've deposited and you reconcile those two, meaning you compare them and make adjustments so that your errors are fixed, actually, is what's going on. And we had one old boy came in for counseling and he kept going, you know, his thing was is always balanced. His bank account was always balanced. And yet he's bouncing checks. And I couldn't figure this out. I'm looking at, and I would go through the math. I said, you know, the only thing I can't figure out is this one entry that just occurs a lot, ESP. What's that mean? And he said, error someplace. No, this is not how you do it, okay? This is not the plan. We don't want to go that route. So, but take the time to do the proper reconciliation. And if you don't know how to do that, then, you know, go online at our website and we'll walk you through it. There's no shame in not knowing how. No one's taught you probably. But quit checking your balance every day and instead learn how to do a proper reconciliation. Do that at most twice a month. At most twice a month. But once a month should suffice. In the old days, we used to get the checks in the mail once a month and we manually did it back with our checking account back in the day. 4 of you are shaking your head. You know what I'm talking about. The rest of you are going, wow, this is new stuff. So you need to learn how to actually do this. And it's pretty easy with online banking now to actually do a full reconciliation with some easy software or even with your bank's website stuff. It's not hard to do. So check our website. We'll give you a tutorial on how to walk through it. Overdrafts are a sign of crisis living. It means that you're not doing the accounting, you're not taking care of business. The Bible says to be diligent to know the state of your flocks and herds. It's your job to be on top of what is going on with the money, and when you're bouncing checks, it says you're not. It says you're living one crisis to the next. And let me tell you how expensive this is. $29.5 billion was spent last year in overdraft fees. $30 billion because people wouldn't bother to stop and do sixth grade math and not write a check when there was no money in their account. That's ridiculous. That's out of control. And it's so bad that the banks are preying on you like parasites. They're like sucking money out of your life. $30 billion came out of the consumer's pocket. Here's the deal. They count on it. 1/3 of the typical bank's revenues are overdraft charges. That's where they're making their money, on us, we the people, being lazy. That's all it is, it's laziness. Because we're not on top of this, we're not making it behave, and you know, from a Christian perspective, we cannot call that good stewardship. It's just simply not. We cannot be giving the bank $30 billion every year because we won't stop and take the time to do sixth grade math and make our money behave. See what I'm talking about being proactive? How money leaves those who don't manage it and goes to those who do? That's a great example of it right there. Now, if not managed and made to behave, the ATM card and the debit card are certain to become budget busters. Now, I'm always telling you to cut up your credit cards. We'll cover that in the debt lesson. But your debit card can be a problem. We all know that. Because it comes out of your checking account. It can run you into overdraft if you don't keep up with it. And your ATM card can be a problem. I have met plenty of people over the years of doing financial counseling that $20 themselves to death. The ATM, the fast cash button, right? They just keep hitting that baby like that money didn't come out of their account. You have to manage all of these tools or, again, the banks are going to fee you to death. You're going to stay out of control, and you're going to continually feel like you're herding cats. It does not work. Now, internet banking is now the most popular form of banking, without a doubt. And the numbers are growing so quickly that it's unbelievable. The days of people doing banking physically with brick and mortar only and having no connectivity to their bank through the internet are just about gone. You've got the opportunity to do balance transfers between things. You can check your balance. You can reconcile there. So I've not got any issue at all. I'm not anti-internet. But again, you've got to be careful there because when you're only doing those kinds of transactions, you're not feeling money. So be aware of that. Be aware that this actual hard, cold cash dollars that you work so hard for becomes a digit, and you're manipulating a digit, and then your behaviors can shift in a negative way. They can take you to a place you don't need to be. Now, banks have started offering budgeting software out there. Some of it's good, some of it's not. I'm always a little paranoid about what the bank is trying to do to help me, okay? So it's not that it's all bad, but just be aware that a lot of that software is trying to direct you into debt products, sign you up for a home equity loan, sign you up for their insurance program, sign you up over here for something else. So a lot of this stuff is all about advertising and putting stuff in your face to get you back into debt or to get you into debt to start with or to take you into products and services that are very profitable, have a large margin for them. So just be, you know, don't be paranoid about it, but just be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. We want to be people of wisdom. We want to be known for being thoughtful and not just being walking into all the traps and, you know, there goes the leg. You don't want to do that stuff.